and we all have our 15 minutes of fame. And I'd like to take a couple of my 15 minutes to talk about the rights and the wrongs in the world of professional wrestling.
Anything for the WWE Championship.
This match is for the ECW World Heavyweight Championship.
For the AWA World Heavyweight Wrestling Championship.
By the time you listen to this, as you may or may not know, and if you're a wrestling fan, you probably will know this, the world of pro wrestling has been chewed up with one or two topics as of this recording. The first being WrestleMania, which... I don't get the ratings for WOW any longer. Unfortunately, WrestleNomics has seemingly concluded acquiring those. He said he would try, but it makes no guarantees. I did report that in the earlier podcast, and I will apologize for that because I don't think that they view it as necessary. And I will say this before I even go any further. Just looking for those ratings is like a huge pain. And if that's what he's going through to try to find it, I don't blame him. But in any case, the wrestling world has been chewed up with that because it was a big event. It had a huge build, story being told, et cetera, et cetera. But then CM Punk. And I realize that this has nothing to do with wrestling. I'm just saying it. These two things literally just sucked the air out of the wrestling room. Add on top of that, the response that AEW attempted to do, like, well, we're gonna release footage of All In. Now, they never said we're gonna show you what happened backstage with CM Punk. They just said that we're gonna release the footage, and anybody that was reading that knew what they were talking about. It was probably the most pointless thing that I've seen. Anyway, you know, I'm getting way off track. You're listening to the Rights and Wrongs of Pro Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Green. Thank you for tuning in. But no, that was just the intro to kind of set that the world of news, which I generally try to get to at the beginning of this thing, has been dominated with those, well, I'll say three events. WrestleMania, Punk and his interview with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour. This had nothing to do with WWE. And then AEW's knee-jerk response to that, because Tony Khan's feelings apparently are paper thin and can't handle any sort of criticism towards his brilliance and booking and things like that. The reason I brought up the ratings, because the weekend of this show that I'm reviewing, WrestleMania carried on. And as, of course, you know, WrestleMania carries over for two nights now. So both days that WOW airs, Saturday and Sunday, were competing against the largest pro wrestling show on the planet. Every wrestling promotion was going to get chewed up in the ratings by WrestleMania. And I would dare say, without having seen any ratings, which is why I brought it up, that WrestleNomics doesn't do that anymore. So take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. There's no ratings that I can look at to begin with. But given the fact that they hovered somewhere around 250,000 viewers on the average, and that they took place on WrestleMania weekend of this episode, I would not be surprised that they just got a stern beating in terms of just viewership. Because at that point, I would doubt that only the hardest of the hardcore were going to watch WOW in favor of, or unless they just did not have access to Peacock to watch WrestleMania to begin with. But any other wrestling fan, you know, they're probably very likely we're going to watch WrestleMania instead. And that's not for nothing. I mean, it had its moments, not just with the guys. I mean, obviously, the show was built around the story, or the weekend was built around the story. But you also had a good showing by Rhea Ripley, and you could see and feel the star power that that woman is generating. That's star power. What she is doing right now, she is killing it. Becky Lynch, I mean, she had to pretty much compete with the hot new thing, you know, more or less. But she's still a star, as is evident by her going on her book tour and everything. I know her contract is coming up, but I fully expect her to return to WWE. And Bayley successfully dethroning and winning the women's championship. Congratulations to her. And I guess I should go ahead and say that this is the news, views, and reviews, you know, news, views, and updates segment. And one thing I think that needs to be noted, because there's not a lot of news here, but because obvious reasons, like I said, the news of wrestling has been chewed up with WrestleMania, CM Punk, and AEW's stupid decision. But there was a nice thing that Bayley did at following WrestleMania. She, during the press conference, the after-show press conference, was wearing the shirt of an independent wrestler. Now, some of you may not know who this young lady is. I just came across her a couple of months myself. The first match I saw with her was her versus Queen Aminata. Now, you might be asking, who is her? Jada Stone. Jada Stone is the young lady in question. And Bayley went out on WWE's press conference time wearing a shirt that was a non-WWE product. She was wearing Jada Stone's shirt. Jada Stone, the Spark, who is good. And she's, for the little bit that I've seen with her, because since I saw the first match, I've gone and watched a couple others. She reminds me of Kiera Hogan, not in terms of her style, but in terms of her passion. When I met Kiera Hogan, she came across as a genuine fan of pro wrestling, and she just wanted to be a part of it. Wasn't, you know, and this is no knock, by the way. It wasn't a case of her just reading it in the paper and deciding that she wanted to, well, I just, you know, want to apply for it or try out. No, this young lady wants to be a wrestler. And she's pretty good at it, at least so far. There was one match I was a little bit in question of. I was like, whoever her partner, you know, her opponent was, I can't remember the young lady's name, but she, the move that she did, she don't need to do it no more. Almost looked like she's about to break Stone's neck. But anyway, Bayley was there at the press conference, and she sat down and she showed the people the shirt, and she was telling that this young lady's going to freak out when she sees this, and rightfully so. And she explained who she was and what she was doing. The fact that she's got a mention there is probably going to mean a lot for Stone going forward, that she has somewhat of a verbal endorsement for this young lady. But Bayley made it clear. She's like, I used to be in those shoes. I seen her waiting, you know, when after the shows, when we were the tag team champions, I guess she's talking about her and Banks at the time. She was saying that, you know, she was coming up to the shows wearing custom-made shoes to represent the team. And, you know, she's been, you know, back then and backstage, I think she did extra work for them. Now she's out on the indies. And Bayley's, like, really legitimately impressed. And I guess this is her full circle moment, because she's like, I was there. And now, you know, it's on the opposite end. I'm kind of she didn't say this, but I'm the veteran, and I'm seeing this person that I watched show up as a fan and do this extra work. And now she's killing it on the indies, and now she's got merch, and she was supporting her. And I thought that was, like, super cool that she did that. And that's not really news necessarily, but I felt like, you know, that's something to be brought up. And, of course, Stone, she tweeted it out. She's like, this means everything to her. And it should, young lady, it should. I don't know if there's a lot of other things that's going on. I was going to mention a few items, but as I mentioned, you know, a lot of the news just has been kind of buried underneath the other goings on in the world. I don't know if I mentioned it before. NXT will introduce another women's championship, be the North American women's title. It was introduced at Stand and Deliver. So you have that to look forward to. Julia also made an appearance, and it is now being reported, Julia from Stardom. It is also being reported now that she has signed with the WWE, which could be interesting. We will see where that goes. This isn't straight wrestling, but there was a little bit of a post about Ronda Rousey, I guess, saying when she lost to Holly Holm, it will, you know, she's still the better fighter. I'm going to respectfully disagree with Rousey on that one. I was like, hey, look, there were MMA experts that were saying that Ronda was good, but she was no striker. And Holly Holm pretty much came out and proved that. But I'm sure, you know, hey, that Ronda probably felt like it was a fluke. But she never did ask for a rematch. She never tried to get that win back. You know, that she had every right to attempt to do it, but it just never went that way. So I have no choice but to believe that, you know, Holmes is the better fighter of the two at this point, unless Rousey does something that is going to be significantly different in another match to show that she can beat her, which I doubt is ever going to happen. Mia Yamashita is set to appear in TNA Impact Las Vegas April 21st. They have announced this. That is breaking news for them. So if you happen to be in Vegas and you're going to the TNA show, get ready for the four-time Princess of Princess Champion. She will be there. Now, who she will be taking on, time will tell. But she has also competed in AEW and Ring of Honor and had championship matches listed against Thunder Rosa and Athena. So we will keep our eyes open for that. And I think that it will probably be a better fit for her to be in Impact or TNA wrestling right now rather than AEW, because AEW's women's division is crap. But that seems to be all the news, views, and updates that's going on right now. I wasn't going to waste a significant amount of time with it. So I believe that it's time to go into the WOW review. And here we go. First off, I want to make an apology to some of the people that have taken time to listen to this podcast. I did not mean to leave the multiple inserts of ads in the last show. For those who do not use YouTube in that regard, if you don't specifically tell it where it's going to go, it's going to try to find what it assumes to be logical breaks in the program, which isn't always a logical break in the program, which is why when I do the news, views, and updates thing, I try to leave a little blank spot there to insert. The algorithm apparently was not smart enough to do that, so it just peppered it all throughout the front half of it, and I didn't realize that at the time. So I get it, okay? I understand, because I don't like looking at stuff and it just add after add after add after add either. So, you know, certainly don't want to present that. One is probably good enough, but, you know, I did not intend on that. My apologies. So, off to the show. Well, the opening slate for this, let's get to where we always do. This is episode 230. The title, Injured or Insidious. 230 was the seasonal number. 82 is the chronological number. The air date, April 6th, as stated, WrestleMania weekend. So whether you watched it on April 6th or April 7th, you pretty much was competing against that. It opens up with David McLean interviewing Abilene Maverick, the VIP. And this started the show on the wrong foot for me. I'll just give it that much. Now, I will say in advance, it is not a bad show up and down for every single segment, but this particular segment, I did not like this. Now, why didn't I like it? It's because of the two, well, I can't even say the two of them. It's because of David McLean and how this thing has been laid out. So he calls out Abilene Maverick, who comes out with the championship and in her wild sweats. But she also comes out with a head bandage and on a crutch, still portraying the idea of that she's been injured and the beast clocked her upside the head, I guess, and caused some sort of neurological damage where she walks with a limp. I don't know. I don't know. And that's the problem with this. I don't understand what they're trying to do, other than the fact that they're trying to be funny. Because that's the only logical thing that you can get out of this, that they're trying to be funny. And it's bad humor, but that's the only thing that I can surmise here, is that this is here for entertainment purposes. Outside of that, I have no clue what they're doing with this. There's very little that I can justify one way or the other. In a real world setting, this would make Abilene Maverick look like a complete idiot. In a pro wrestling world setting, it still makes her look like an idiot. Like, maybe somebody can explain it to me. I'm begging, please, I open this up. Maybe someone else can explain this to me, because I don't understand. Is this a case of Abilene Maverick trying to legitimately convince David McLean that she's hurt? If so, why would she send this footage that she sent that shows her at the veterinarian's office? Why would she bother to send this? Why would she bother to have the WOW crew follow her to this? Is this supposed to be a case of, well, you know, I'm just not smart enough to know that I'm sending this footage? Or I messed up? Or I believe what I say? If so, why? I don't understand any angle that this comes from, other than they're just doing it just to try to be funny and a bad comedy segment. So she's comes out and she's still insisting, you know, as Dave McLean's like, we've seen the footage and blah, which is, again, is stupid, because why is she acting shocked about this? And why is she still like, no, you know, like why don't you believe what I'm saying? When there's no reason to believe what she's saying. She didn't even provide the element of the effort to try to lie. So he presents this, but it basically comes down to Abilene Maverick saying that, well, I signed a contract already, and I'm going to put up a, you know, the title against somebody, assumably to do the old, well, I'll fulfill my championship obligations so that I will not have to, you know, be forced into a match that I don't want. Therefore, you cannot make me wrestle the person that I'm trying to avoid. In this case, the Beast. So she says that, and she's like, well, he asks, well, who is it? Then she's like, well, that's for me to know, and you find out. And then the Beast comes out and pretty much attacks Abilene Maverick. And then the extra comedy ensues because he has to jump up on the second rope like he saw a mouse and, you know, skirt away. I do not try to have a problem with David McLean. But when he did it in his younger days, when it was in GLOW and he was probably 20 and smaller, I could see that, kind of. I don't understand why he's doing it here. He's got to be in his 60s by now. He's an adult male. And it's not as if he has no ability to get out of the ring. Even with that's coming on, he can leave with urgency. But what is he jumping up on the rope for, like he's scared for his life? I don't get that. But this happens, and then it gets the referees out there to try to do something about it. And, of course, he's still getting up on the ropes. He's like, you know, calling for help or whatever you want to call it. Nigel Zane is on commentary, and he does the whole, and the beast is unleashed. And this is what I was afraid that he was going to get to eventually, that being he's starting to use McLeanisms. When he first started in commentary, I was pretty, not adamant, but I was pretty fair about the fact that I was like, well, you know, he's able to deliver the wild stuff and toe the company line without sounding, without using David McLean's verbiage, without sounding like him. Now he's starting to morph into what David McLean would do and say. The beast is unleashed. That's a David McLeanism. He, for whatever reason, I don't know why or where he picked up that term, but he likes using it. And he's liked using it since 2000. First pay-per-view was called Wild Unleashed, Caged Heat. He would say that a lot. Cage Heat is unleashed. Then we got the Beast. The Beast is unleashed. And I was like, I don't know what it is about that term, but he just seems to like it. But now it's filtering into Zane's commentary. And this is where I was like, I don't want him to do this. I don't want him to just start to morph into a second David McLean voice. But I'm feeling like that's starting to happen now. And I think that that should be avoided at all costs. Just get away from that before it becomes a problem. So anyway, this segment carries on. I forgot to mention that they did do the little pitch-in-pitcher thing when Dave McLean's talking about, well, we saw the footage and we saw the thing on the wall, and she's looking all shocked and like, what are you talking about? Which again goes back to what I'm saying. What is she supposed? Is she supposed to believe the lie that she's saying? Was that supposed to be an accident? I don't understand, because this is just badly done. There's really no other thing I can say for it. This angle is just badly done, and it's starting to come off like a retread of something that they already did like 2 years ago. This is basically the Beast versus Tessa Blanchard with Abilene Maverick standing in for Tessa Blanchard, minus the injury angle. Tessa Blanchard's whole deal with the Beast became Tessa didn't want to wrestle her, and she started picking her own opponents so that she didn't have to wrestle, even though the opponents that she picked were like all top-tier people. I was like, why is she trying to avoid this if that's, you know, if these are the opponents that she's going to pick? But anyway, so here we have this, and it's basically the same thing. Abilene Maverick is there trying to avoid getting in the ring with the Beast. She claims that she has an opponent that you have to find out at some point in time later on. The Beast comes in. I already told you about that. She comes and beats up Abilene, and, you know, we see that she is not nearly as hurt as she claims she is, even though in this instance, she just took a spear and she's walked out kind of fine once she got out of the ring. Dave McLean decides he wants to pick up the belt. Abilene Maverick grabs it. I'm not sure why Dave McLean decided to get into a tug of war with her again, other than the fact that they just did it for comedy, because what happens? He takes a bump. Not a big one, but he takes a bump. He tries to hold on to the belt. He apparently does not. He has the grip of a three-year-old child because he can't hold on to it. She yanks it away, and then he falls over backwards comically, like, whoa, and then, you know, hits the mat. And Abilene goes back, and she's laughing as she goes into the aisleway or whatever the case may be. And they took a second and paused on the camera shot on a mom who clearly does not know what is going on there. She's just politely applauding. That shit. And that's got nothing to do with the segment, mind you. But when I saw her, because the camera was so focused in, I was like, this woman does not know what is happening. It's just nice, polite applause. Like, that's nice. This seems so wild. Anyhow, so Dave McLean speaks to the Beast at the end of this, like, basically saying, you'll get your title rematch or, you know, whatever. Why was he trying to take the belt away from Abilene Maverick in the first place? I don't understand that either. Like I said, the only logical explanation that I have for any of that is that he just wanted to do something, quote, entertaining. But this is your world's champion. He can do what he wants. It's his company and it's his title belt. I still do not agree that he should be a focal point to these things. And by him standing in the ring, talking, you know, being the lead interviewer and then trying to hold on to the belt, I mean, it takes focus away from what's going on. It turns it back into a case of I have to insert myself in between these things with no real payoff to be had. There's no point in him grabbing that belt other than that he just wanted to do the spot or somebody there. Well, I can't even say somebody because even if it came out of Abilene's Maverick mouth, like, well, you should grab the belt, and he agreed to it. So he wanted to do the spot. So the Beast has promised a title match. Yay and congratulations to her. I do not have a lot of interest in this match. Just because of the build, it just seems ridiculous. And whatever goodwill Abilene Maverick had in being the sneaky champion before, this angle has undermined. Before she got past a Penelope Pink, she got past a Princess Ozzy, she got past a Beast, she was outsmarting them and what have you. But this makes her just look dumb. Like, I don't know how she went from being, the mastermind isn't the right word, but how she went from being so cunning and able to get past these obstacles to now just like, I did not have the brains enough for me to clip the video that was sent in. Or I didn't have the brains enough to use my own camera with my own cameraman that I could control rather than the WOW camera crew. None of that makes sense. None of that makes sense. None of it. Next segment, Princess Ozzy versus Reyna Del Rey with Adriana Gambino. Now, the only downside of this match is that they didn't explain Gambino. Other than that, I mean, this is probably my favorite match of the show because it made sense. And I want to make sure to say that it made sense. Reyna Del Rey, I have said in a prior episode in review that she has not really had, in my opinion, the best of luck as it relates to her angles, her feuds, because they seemingly got cut short one way or the other. First one being, you know, she was in the feud with the Beast that really didn't conclude. Because the Beast got hurt. Second one being that she's part of Last Call. That didn't seem like it concluded anywhere. I mean, officially it did. They lost. Even though it was a loss in a loss via archive footage. But that ended Last Call. last called, and because Wrecking Ball left, that ended that. And so now she's back to being a single. And she is seemingly the heavy for Adriana Gambino. Again, not explained why. Not explained why Gambino needed her in the first place, but this is what they presented. So other than that, we're fine. Because Ozzy and Reina Del Rey had a match that focused on the story. I mean, David and Goliath, I guess. You know, that's usually the common term for this. But it was the larger heel taking on the quicker, lighter, faster, you know, baby face. And they worked it as such. They did this with Ozzy having to take a beating for a little while until she could out-quick, out-think, out-maneuver her larger opponent, her stronger opponent. And it, honestly, this match is probably wasted a bit on the crowd that they had, but they did a fine job here. It was an easy story to tell. You could visually look at the match and see that, okay, she being Princess Ozzy is having to work hard to try and get some kind of advantage here. Del Rey did a good job of trying to corner and, you know, just doing little things. Like, I'm trying to get you in the corner, but Ozzy gets out of the way. I try to hit you with this big clothesline, but she ducks underneath it. You know, she's doing the things that she can as the bigger, stronger person. And it took is like one big move to end it, to bring the attention back, or to bring the advantage back to Del Rey. She caught Ozzy with a wild swing around the wrist, turned it, and just yanked her down to the mat. And then she was in control. And as stated, it was easy to see what this was. I thought they both did a fine job here. It was slower than what most people would have liked. I would openly admit that. Because I know there were some people in the room like, well, you know, they didn't do enough. But that's the downside. I know some fans are just looking for high spot, high spot, high spot. But they told the story in the ring. And Del Rey was not afraid to cheat despite the fact that she was a larger, more powerful opponent. Princess Ozzy starts working up some momentum. She's trying to throw some punches at her. And then she tries to take off and get some momentum against the ropes. What does Del Rey do? She grabs the hair, yanks her down to the mat. Boom. She stayed in control, even if she cheated unnecessarily to do it. It kind of reminded me of, you know, when Andre the Giant was a heel. He did not have to cheat. But he did it because he was a heel. He was 7 feet tall, or 7 feet three, or something like, you know, around those thereabout. Easily a good 400 pounds by that time. And did he need to be choking somebody with the straps of his singlet? No, but he did, because that's what heels do. And Del Rey was like that here. Did she have to do that? No, she didn't have to, but she did, because she's a heel. And it forced Ozzy to have to do something to get the advantage. When she's hoisted up on Del Rey's shoulders, she's firing elbow after elbow after elbow to the side of Del Rey's head. And then she slips herself into a sleeper. One of those moves that you could apply to anybody, regardless of size or strength. Del Rey does a great job of positioning herself to where Ozzy needs to be. There's not a lot of wasted movement or staggering, stalling time here, because they both know what they're doing. Even Gambino is good on the outside. She's yelling and screaming, get out of the way, move. You know, she there's concern on her. She doesn't look like she's just goofing off or playing a part. The referee, like, nearly everything about this match I liked. Referee's getting in there. I mean, she's probably a far more authoritative-looking referee than the one that I don't like, Scheinberg, and we'll talk about him later because he did what Scheinberg does, but we'll get to that. So in any case, The match, I thought, was moving along fine. I mean, Ozzy goes back for another sleeper, or you could possibly consider it a choke. But you understand why, because she can't do what she might normally be able to do with her opponents because of the size differential. She catches Del Rey with a cutter, puts her down. And while the referee is checking on her to see if she can continue, Ozzy is trying to go up to the top rope. Gambino catches her ankle and stalls her just long enough for Del Rey to get back to her feet, hoist her over the top rope, and then hit her move, a top rope neck breaker, and she's done. She gets the win. 1, 2, 3. It's perfect. And it gave just enough leeway on either side. Del Rey got the win. Reina Del Rey accomplished what she set out to accomplish. I beat Princess Ozzy. But Ozzy also has a gripe here. You wouldn't have won if Gambino hadn't stopped me from getting my frog splash off. It just took that long and threw me off pace that much that it cost me to win. This is a thumbs up match, regardless of whether it's not a high pace, high phonetic match like that. Is a thumbs up match for me. Next segment, the Brat Pack, as represented by Gigi Gianni and Little J Boogie, taking on the Mighty Mites. Nigel Zane sells the Mighty Mites as fan favorites. I'm not entirely sure how, because I just don't see it. Like, how are they fan favorites for any? They barely done anything. All they've done is come out there and lose. But, you know, it is what it is. So the Brat Pack come out. And, of course, the only real tying bind that Boogie has to the rest of the group is that she has a boombox. They have never explained, even though they reference it, they have never explained why it is that J Boogie chose to join with these two open heels when Boogie has really not done all that much. It becomes really difficult to defend J Boogie as a dancer. I mean, because I did say that I went to her YouTube channel, and her dancing there is like significantly different than what you see on WOW. And she did the whole dance number here in the ring. My mandate for her would be like, stop dancing, because it doesn't reflect well for you here. I don't get the gimmicks with WOW often. I've already been clear that I don't really care for them, because they don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. They serve no purpose other than to provide with whoever's watching a very superficial idea of who they are and what they're doing. So, oh yeah, she tried the little dance number before they got their pose on in the ring. And it just doesn't work well. In a wrestling environment, it just doesn't seem to work well. But we have the Mighty Mites coming out after this, Sugar and Spice. I don't know why they just don't go with Sugar and Spice. What? Now that I'm saying it out loud, how does that even relate to the title, the Mighty Mites? I mean, I don't know. Should this not be something, you know, flavorful, or I don't know. We got Sugar and Spice, the Mighty Mites. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking that. Possibly. Anyhow, they get out there while Nigel Zane and McClain talk about Ric Flair and Charlotte Flair for whatever reasons. Like, hey, Rick loves to watch the women wrestle and whatnot. I'm sure he did. But for all the wrong reasons. I know they won't get into that on the show, but, you know, we all know. BK Rhythm does her rap. This goes back to that superficial thing that WOW has. These raps don't go anywhere. They've been going on for a year now, and they don't do anything. They don't garner heat. They don't forward anything as far as her growth. They don't forward anything as far as an angle. They're just random rhymes that she does just because she can do it. Most of which are not considered great or good by most people that are watching. So almost everybody I've seen, either online or otherwise, unless they are already within the WOW group, has some version of a John Cena joke tied into this girl. And I like her. I like Killer Kate. BK Rhythm, maybe not. But they all have it. Who is that supposed to be? Jane Cena? The mistress of Thugger? You know, just all sorts of nonsense like that. So, what was that? Yeah, the Mighty Mites come out. They get the rap. And then we get the match kicked off. I am not a fan of this incarnation of the Brat Pack. The incarnation that should exist is Rhythm and Gianni. And that should be it. Matter of fact, at this point, I would say that they probably should just drop J Boogie altogether. I know that won't happen, but I would think that that would be a better thing for the team. Even though the team has no future, they're just there. And WOW has made it clear what the value of the Brat Pack happens to be. And it's not much. They're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to win any tag team championships. They barely get to speak, much less have a significant angle. So, but I will say this because I think this also needs to be pointed out. Much like I said with the previous match, Princess Ozzy and Reina Del Rey, Gigi Gianni, I really like her. I think that she does the best that she can do with even the smallest things. That being positioning, getting where she needs to be, being able to stall out for her opponents, you know, just by looking dazed and confused, and rather than standing around waiting for them to come and get her, looking like there's an invisible force field in her way. She is always in motion, even if she's kind of standing up. I mean, just go back and watch the match. She's almost always doing something to justify why this person is getting the advantage of her. Whether that be leaning down and holding her head or taking a bump and getting up and looking dazed and confused, holding her jaw. She's always doing something. And it becomes that much more evident when you go and you see other people on the same show that stand around and look like there's some sort of force field in between them and their opponent because they're trying to wait for the next move to happen. Gianni, she has positioned herself well in this match. I mean, she took bumps well in this match. She sold facial expressions well in this match. I mean, I don't know if this match is the one that I would consider made me a fan or made me like her more because I liked her to begin with, but it became very much evident in this match, in my opinion. Subtle things. And what she does, the small things that she does, because she doesn't do a lot of big stuff. It's not like she's running around doing her karanas and dives and this and that and the other. But the little things that she does, she seems very efficient with doing. And it does not seem out of context or out of character when she decides to say in the match where she walks across Sugar's back and she walks across it again. Then she decides to put her foot on the back of her neck and pose. All of that seems perfectly well within the realm of what Gigi Gianni could and would do. J Boogie, on the other hand, she's not terrible, but I'm just not sold on her yet. I just am not. She always looks like she is playing a part or needs to be told what to do at any given moment. I know that there was a point in the match where they do a double team move on Sugar, and you know, I think of the double suplex. And yeah, it looks like it was again when in the context of the match. I shouldn't say that was a double suplex; it was a double elbow at that point. But then you got Gigi, who's like pinner, and I think that unless they want to send me a message to say no, that was just, you know, a spur of the moment thing. But it just felt like Gigi probably was the captain there and told her, this is what you need to do, because, you know, I know that's not a natural instinct for you. But Boogie always seems like she is in the midst of remembering lines or wanting to laugh, or, you know, or I'm having a good time here, I'm playing around. Even when she tagged in, she like skipped into the middle. And I don't know enough about her at this point. I don't know enough about her character, because they don't talk. When she's trying to hold Spice down, and the looks that she's giving on her face as Spice is struggling to get out. I'm not Spice, Sugar. And I got to give Sugar credit. Sugar looks like she was somebody that was desperately trying to reverse the hold. Whereas Jay Boogie looks like, well, what's going on? You know, like she's got that kind of look on her face. So if it was just TV, people would consider that overacting. That would be the term for it in that regard. Here, I just don't think that she has the nuances of what she's trying to express down yet. I know she knows what she's trying to express: desperation, adulation, anger. I mean, she knows what she's trying to do, but she doesn't always express it clearly. The match in and of itself, the Mighty Mites, probably one of their better outings, of course, considering the finish of the match, absolutely. And this goes back to one of those things I said before. I don't understand why the Mites were introduced against the Last Call. Even if they lost in their debut, I don't understand why they was introduced as like a squash. Because it didn't go anywhere, it didn't do anything. Last Call isn't even there anymore. They could have lost to a team like this and still looked good. My vote was for Los Banditas because they needed a win. But Los Banditas is a lost cause, and we'll get to them later on too. Gianni still does a fantastic job here. They do their little brat pack thing where they all decide to get up on the apron and choke somebody out on the second rope and take a picture together or what have you. And this is another one of those points where I don't know what Jay Boogie's thing is with this group. Why is she there? Because when this is happening, BK Rhythm, the second that she has the time and ability to do it, she starts choking her out. She grabs Sugar's back of the head and drags her across the second rope. Meanwhile, Boogie's just looking like, ooh, why are you doing that? You know that type of thing. So, I mean, I don't know what she is there for through all of this. Commentators question a little bit, but that's about it. Doesn't really go into much further explanation than that. Dave McClain talking about her. I don't know if her mom would approve, but what is there not to approve? We don't know what the relationship between any of these three are, other than they got together for the Trios tournament and they're still sticking together. And that she has a connection to him because she's, quote, hip-hop. So anyhow, getting towards the finish, because I guess that'll be the important thing here. The Brat Pack get together, Gianni and Boogie, they do a double suplex on Sugar, or at least they attempt a double suplex on Sugar, and she fought off. She did the old hot tag thing. And this is what I was talking of, where you could make the argument that some people don't know how to position themselves in a place where they don't look like they're just obviously standing around waiting. Because after Sugar does what she does and breaks free of the double suplex, I mean, she gives a kick to the gut to Boogie, gives a stunner to Gianni. I don't know if she'd want to do that, but since it's a finish for somebody else later, but, I mean, it was a great fight-off. I have to give her that. Gianni backs herself up to the corner, and she kind of leans her head down so that she doesn't see the person that's coming in. Boogie, on the other hand, just kind of staggers to the center and looks right at her. And the second that the tag is made, then she charges into a clothesline. See that? There lies the difference. That's what I'm talking about. And those are the type of things that Boogie is going to have to work on. It's just those small things like that. She looked like she was waiting for it, whereas Gianni gave herself a little bit of a reprieve by staggering back, going to the ropes, leaning her head down where she didn't see the tag in the first place. So Spice comes in. She's cleaning house. There's a little bit of a flub up between her and Boogie because she didn't get the right, she didn't get her wrist right away or her hand right away. Does a nice little high spot off of the ropes, flips them both over. Spice is coming in for the cleanup. It doesn't come off as ridiculous because she's not that much smaller than everybody else in the ring, which is what you didn't have in their debut match with Last Call. They looked ridiculously tiny there, and they were portrayed as ridiculously tiny. She tries to do a knee strike to Jay Boogie. The first one whiffs pretty badly, but the camera angle that is on prevents the TV crowd from seeing it. The live crowd, I'm pretty sure, saw it. So she comes back with another shot, nails her, and then she catches her with like a head plant, reverse head plant. Gianni is able to stop it. Sugar comes in and gives a drop kick to Gianni. Gianni takes a great bump right against the ropes and then falls out to the floor like a limp noodle. I really enjoy her work. Boogie is standing around looking like, hey, what's happening? What's going on? Because she sees her partner hit the ground. And I guess that was the setup for it. It felt like it was a little bit of a jump. But that might be off because they did cut to a camera angle. But it felt like a jump just the way that it was viewed. But after that, Spice comes up. Springboards, catches her with like a head scissors to the mat, and then a senton of sorts. Didn't really get it all, but she got enough and got the pin, and that was it. And the Mighty Mites win their first match over the Brat Pack by pinning Jay Boogie, which was the right person to pin in this match. The camera angle that they had with the kid afterwards, I don't know. They must have gave him some sugar or told him, they look, just scream as loud as you can to make sure that everybody knows that this was an exciting match. But no, seriously, the Mighty Mites did a good job here. This is one of their better showings. Not I'm hesitant to say the best, but of course it is the one that they got with a win, so it counts for something here. Cannot say enough about what they did together. I thought there was some good chemistry with the Mites and the Brat Pack, although there's still stuff that Boogie has to work on. Gianni, fine job. Next segment, Lana Starr and Mammy Sweet Heat steal something from the Mother Truckers locker room. I guess this was important. All this really did was it told you that the match that is coming up next has no value to it other than we just need to fill the space. And that's what it was. It was just a match to fill the space. It didn't really do anything one way or the other. The Dojo Defenders were just bodies in the ring. There was nothing significant that happened as a result of them being in the ring with the Dojo Defenders. Now, the Dojo, I don't like the name. I'll just say that. I don't like the name. It sounds silly, and I don't know who the Dojo Defenders are supposed to be or what dojo they're defending anyway. But they come out, following Miami Sweet Heat, who come out with the Wild Duffel Bag. Now, because it's not important, I'm just going to go ahead and say what they were allegedly attempting to steal. You know, at the end, they unveiled that, or at least it suggested that they were attempting to steal the tag team championship belts. Again, do not understand why they would do that, because it's not like they would just immediately make them tag team champions, or, you know, maybe they were going to try to hold it hostage until they got a title shot. I don't know. But they didn't think to look, apparently, in the bag before they came out there, and they discovered that what they stole was their clothes being the mother truckers, which shouldn't be all that difficult to steal, because every time that they're in the locker room, they turn it into their personal laundry room to begin with. So, except for the last time, now they're hanging up street signs that say honk honk and something else or other. The dojo defenders are every bit the cartoon characters that you would imagine them to be. And that's not anything against them personally, but, I mean, come on. Did I tell everybody who the Dojo Defenders are? I don't remember if I said it in the last episode. I'll just repeat it again. Kara Kai is Aurora Tavis. I think I pronounced the last name correctly. And Tara Strike is Tootie Lynn Ramsey. Both of which are on the independents. Tootie Lynn, I believe she has actually wrestled within the NWA for at least a show or two. And, you know, they're assigned these, or they've taken on the personas of these new characters that they have here. Almost everybody in this ring I like. I don't think that the chemistry between the four of them was really good. I don't have a problem with Miami Sweet Heat. I don't have a problem with the individuals playing the Dojo Defenders. And they did as good of a match as I think they were capable of doing with each other. But I don't know if the chemistry was in full bloom here, because there seemed to be some points where they just kind of walked into moves and let me stand here for a second so I can get you to, you know, do the whole tilt the world on me and, you know, and stuff like that. The blocking of some shots, you know, like there's one where Lawrence tried to deliver a big wild right hand, and it was almost like, I'm just doing this so that you can block it. And I know they could do better than that. I know they can. I've seen them do better, but I like I said, I just don't think that they had whatever chemistry that they needed for these small portions of the match. I just don't think it was there fully. So I'm not overly familiar with the Dojo Defenders in full. Let's see. Let me get my notes out here. Kara Kai. So the heat is caught on Kara Kai, the Aurora Tavis, if you're looking at her on the independents. She gets caught with a Tilt-A-Whirl slam. It was called a Tilt-A-Whirl backbreaker by the commentators. Now, I'm just saying it was a little off there, but I am not going to get on them because I know commentating is not as easy as it looks. I've tried it, and sometimes you just have a mental slip. You'll call something the wrong thing, and I can say that with absolute certainty. Until you have tried it, it does seem easier. But sometimes your mind is going a little bit faster than what your words are saying. So, in any case, they get Kara Kai over there and they get the heat on her. It moves kind of slowly at this point. And then, you know, Lindsay's doing like a blatant choke on the ropes and grabbing the arms and what have you. I mean, she does a fine job seemingly cheating, but they also look like they're getting either signals crossed or they don't know what they're getting ready to do next. After, like, somewhere in the match, it's about 4 minutes or so in, and we got Lindsay, and she's grabbing the arms of Kara Kai. she's getting ready to go off of the ropes and deliver a dropkick, because this is clearly what they've already discussed and are prepared to do. So either it was Kai who forgot and didn't position herself, or Lara grabbed her ahead of schedule and then, you know, caused her sister to have to stop. I would tend to believe that Kara Kai, and like I said, I don't have anything to base this on of who dropped what, but I would tend to believe that Kara Kai probably forgot the spot and Lara had to come over there and pull her back into place so that the dropkick that they were going to have could happen. But then it caused Lindsay to have to sit there and wait for this to be done so that she could do it. So she goes over and she starts arguing with Tootie Lynn, Tara Strike, to give her something to do, which is good. And I think the referees probably should have been on that side at that point while the argument was happening, so that it just didn't come off like she was just wasting time necessarily. Because he saw her sister, her being Laurie, Lindsay and Laura, God damn it. Lindsay and Laura. He saw the sister, the illegal one, outside cheating. So he had to stand over there and call the cheating to get her to stop. While the other sister, Lindsay, is in there arguing with Tara Strike. You know, these twins, man, they get y'all mixed up. Anyhow, Lindsay gets Kai. Gives her a show of strength, shows the backbreaker, and walks over to her corner. And then they drape her across the middle ropes, gives her a nice stomp in the stomach. I thought that was probably the best chemistry I've seen. Came down on her stomach. She sold it good. Lindsay delivered it good. And then, you know, the sisters doing the double team. One of them charges across, Lindsay charges across and nails Tara Strike. She's just standing there waiting for it to happen. It's amazing to me when they do those things, because it's like the other one they don't see this person charging across the ring and don't decide to get off or block it or nothing. Just let me stand here and take it. So, Kai is sitting trying to get through this massive beating that she's taking from the sisters, the Miami Sweet Heat. They get her up and they hoist her in the air for a significant amount of time for the double suplex spot. And they deliver it with efficiency. And then they decide to go and do their double push-ups to show how fit and shape they are. And not only do they do that, but they hit Tara Strike again, who's just standing around waiting for this elbow to come and nail her across the face. So the Dojo Defenders are having a slight problem on their debut. Kai is crawling across the ring to try to make the tag. She gets caught by Laurie, but she's able to push her off. Then she gets a hot tag to Tara Strike. Ah, boy, these names. Anyhow. So she comes in like a house of fire, and she's chopping down, you know, one of the sisters of the Miami Sweet Heat. Gives her some knee shots, some stiff kicks, and all that good stuff. Here is where the invisible force field comes into place, because Lindsay tags into her sister. Strike has to stand there and wait for her to come in. When Laura gets into the ring, she tries to give her a shot. She gets blocked with a big kick, stops it from getting anywhere near her. And that one move proves too much for her to handle, so she rolls over and then she makes the tag out to her tag partner, and the Dojo Defenders have taken that big boot to the side of the head. And Kara Kai is back into the ring. And with little to no effort, Miami Sweet Heat regained control immediately. She catches the foot, sweeps it out from underneath her, stands there and gives a, you know, like, hey, look at me. And then they set her up for the Fab Jab. One, two, three, and Tyra Strike is incapable of getting back into the ring to save her partner. And Miami Sweet Heat win again. And their arms are raised in victory by whoever this referee is. I don't know his name. So we have another debut and another loss by a new team and or talent to WOW. Not surprising. The second that they said, tune in next week, folks, to watch the debut of the Dojo Defenders, I immediately wrote them off as losing. And it's nice to know that I was right. So, as I said, it wasn't a horrible match or something like that, but it there were spots where it just seemed like the chemistry was just a little off, in my opinion. But it didn't matter because this match had a lot less to do about the Dojo Defenders, so rather than them just being a means to an end to get to the real story, and that's the Mother Truckers. So at the end of the match, they show that they stole the Truckers' jean vest, and then they talk to David again. And they're going on about, you know, winning the title match. And I don't know why they continue to talk to David. Why do they keep doing this? But they do. Like I said, it's not going to go anywhere unless he does something like what he did at the beginning of the show, where he can take a bump for, you know, for comedy. So they come out. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. They continue to talk to Dave McLean about won the title match and yada, yada, yada. But the Truckers come out. And they easily dispatch the heels. And it looks like we're heading to another Sweet Heat versus Mother Truckers match. Truckers get on the microphone and then basically say that, hey, they just stole the wrong bags. If y'all was looking for the belts is in the bag right next to it. Again, I guess it's fine. Don't know what they would have gained by stealing the belts other than what I suggested earlier. They might have been able to hold them hostage, like, you'll get it back when we, you know, get a title shot or whatever. But in the WOW universe, that doesn't seem to work anyway because Dave McLean just went and got the belt. I mean, we've already tried this with the same group. Not for the tag titles, but for the singular title. Lana Starr ran off with the World's Championship, and he just went and got it back for him the following week. So I don't know where this would have gone. So it is an opening for the Mother Truckers to accept a fight anytime with Miami Sweet Heat. Swag gets on the microphone. She basically tells them both, if you wanted a title match, all you had to do was ask. So they were going to take them on. All they got to do is just ask for it. Their ranking did not matter. And that's fine. I mean, it's championship prerogative. But as I said, the Dojo Defenders were just a body here. Any tag team would have done in this match. So long as they lost, any tag team would do. And I just have to say as a side note, just being in the room when this was airing, the first thing I heard just suddenly out of the room was, who the fuck are they? So, talking about the Dojo Defenders. So, yeah. The new inserts, the people that come in to lose, doesn't always go over well with certain individuals. But the Mother Truckers end this on their normal catchphrase, honk, honk. I hate that thing. But to the Truckers' credit, they're doing their best to get that over. The next segment is an ad for Goldie Collins versus the Beast. And I wrote in my notes here, how is this a selling point? Like, tune in, fans. Next week, you won't want to miss Goldie Collins taking on the Beast. How is that a selling point? If you've watched WOW for any number of weeks, you know Goldie Collins hasn't won anything. So how is she supposed to be presented as some sort of a threat or a match worth watching to this person who is in WoW's universe like an indestructible force? Why would Goldie Collins versus the Beast entice me to watch this show? Especially, you know, given her record. Goldie Collins has not won. The Beast wins pretty much all the time. The Beast is portrayed as unstoppable. Is this supposed to be the main event of the next show? Why would you choose this? I question the things that they advertise as this is what you're going to see next week. Tune in. Because it doesn't seem like a match that's worthwhile. It doesn't seem like a match worth going out of my way to watch at all. Watching the show, sure. I mean, but they probably would do better just to go down the lineup. Like, next week, fans, these matches are happening in the main event, so-and-so. But, yeah, it was the first thing I thought of. Because, like, how is this a enticing match by any stretch of the imagination? I was just looking at TNA Plus the other day. And they put a match on there that I did not even know that I wanted to watch. But they made me want to watch it. Alex Shelley versus Nick Nemeth. Now, it's not that I view Alex Shelley as some, you know, the equivalent of Nick Nemeth. Honestly, I don't. I think he's a phenomenal wrestler. But I don't think he had the same presentation as Nemeth did. Not that he's less talented. He just hadn't had the same presentation. But in TNA in the last year or so, because he won the world's title, because he had some good title defenses, because he's been there for a long period of time, because he's innovated so many moves and styles and what have you, in their universe, they can sell him as a big deal. Nick Nemeth already comes in with a pedigree having been Dolph Ziggler. And in the course of that show, from start to finish, they peppered in as much promo material, interviews with talent, and everything else in between to help make this feel like a big deal. And they did. They made it feel like a big deal. You know, it was a standard wrestling match, and it took them a while to get going. I enjoyed the match. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't bing, 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 fast paced all over the place, which is probably much better for them. But they sold this like it was, you need to watch this. This is a battle of generations. This is Nick Nemeth, the wanted man, versus the Motor City Machine Gun, Alex Shelley. And every break that they got, somebody was, you know, they either had a video package, an interview from one of the participants, or they were interviewing somebody that was in the locker room like, yeah, I have to tune in and see this. I was at home watching TV when Alex Shelley got here, you know, just stuff like that. And they made it feel like something. WoW does not make this feel like anything. Goldie Collins versus the Beast, it's like you're supposed to be sold on it just on the merit of it's Goldie Collins, so why not watch it? And it's the Beast, so there you go. Like, their names alone should be enough for you, and I don't see how that is. It just, this isn't enough. It should have more to it than that. The last segment, Los Banditas, the new version of Los Banditas, which doesn't appear to be new very long, but the new version of Los Banditas, with Tormenta versus the Island Dynasty, or was left of the Island Dynasty. Now, if you recall, the original version of the Island Dynasty was four members, not three, but Leah McCoa has departed from the company. And we are now down to Tiki Chamorro and the Tonga Twins. And the Banditas, we don't know what happened to Evelyn Rivera. But we got Angel Rose, Sylvia Sanchez, and their partner, Tormenta. And much like Goldie Collins, the Banditas and Tormenta do not win all that often, if at all. So it was not a real big surprise for me where this was going in this match. I don't think it's going to be a shock for you either. But we'll start with the obvious. The match kicks off, and for whatever reason, I don't know why they, I don't know what determines when the managers just decide that, well, I don't need to be in ringside. But this is one of those moments when she decided she didn't need to be in ringside for some reason. Sophia Lopez goes over to commentary. And that's another thing that seems to be happening more and more often. It's like if there's a heel group or manager, then one of them has to go to commentary for some reason. The idea that standing at ringside and actually trying to lead my team to victory just seems like a foreign concept. One of the nice things that we had in this match, even though it was a, you know, painfully short match for what I, in theory, should have been felt more like a big deal or a main event, is the opening kind of setup, the opening square off. I don't know why those things like that kind of tickle me, and I enjoy it, but I do. So you got the Bandidas and Tormentas squaring off face-to-face with the Island Dynasty. And it seems to be like, you know, they were fine. Match just starts up, and Scheinberg is standing around there like, hey, guys, stop it. You know, he's trying very hard. But eventually it gets cut off by Tormenta. She cuts off Tiki Chamorro. I don't know what they were trying to do, they being the Bandidas, because Tormenta went and tagged in both members of the Bandidas, Sanchez and Rose, and then the referees just standing there letting them do it. Just, hey, guys, what are you doing? And I understand they're trying to, you know, make it exciting and get all three of them in there so they can get it, do their stuff. But there's a point here where they're like, there are absolutely zero rules that's going on here. It's just stand around and do things. And it was just one after the other. Seeing you in for a super kick, catch you with a cold breaker, seeing you out of the ring, shoot this person off, make a tag, do a forearm. just a bunch of that. Scheinberg yells, you know, a good deal at some of them, like, yeah, hey, one, two, three. You know, he does that. But when the other stuff starts kicking in, the ruckus of the match, when there's more than one person carrying on, he just tends to do the same thing. He stands in some corner and he starts waving his arms around like, no, don't do this. And I don't know why he does that, because they never listen to him. They just do it anyway. And the finish of this, not just the finish, but the aftermath is out of, I guess it's good on one hand because it's providing some kind of story that they can sink their teeth into, hopefully. But on the other hand, I'm like, why is this happening? Where is this going? So we got both of the twins in the ring at the end with Angel Rose. Scheinberg is just standing around waving his hands again like he always does. Like, hey, you gotta get out of the ring. And doesn't make any efforts to try to disqualify anybody or look like he's trying to disqualify anybody or look like he's trying to present any level of authority. It's just everybody's doing whatever they want to do when they want to do it. So the twins sent Tormenta down onto the second rope. Chamorro comes in. Scheinberg's waving his arms again. And she's trying to do her version of the 619. Sanchez stops her, grabs the feet of Chamorro before she can make contact. But she doesn't get faltered by that. She just turns and she runs towards the ropes, gets some momentum, and then she charges out to where Sanchez has pulled Tormenta to try to get her out of harm's way. But unfortunately, she has gotten her directly into harm's way now. Scheinberg's, of course, still standing around like, hey, stop it, stop it, stop it. Don't do that. And Chamorro takes a dive through the ropes. She's at least giving effort to what she's doing. I have to give her that. So she takes out both Tormenta and Sanchez, and then on the inside, the newest member of Las Banditas, Angel Rose, takes another pin by getting hit with the Tongan drop slash neckbreaker combo. They go down, and then the arms are raised. They win the match 1-2-3. As this happens, the babyfaces leave the ring. And Lopez comes in, and she's complaining to her clients. Now, we don't necessarily hear clearly what she's saying, you know, but she's frustrated in that. And that became the opening theme of the angle, is that Lopez is frustrated. They talked about it in commentary, like, you just walked off of your clients the other day and whatever. So she's there, and she talks about that, and then they lose, and so she comes in, and she's upset with the team and how they let her down and everything. And then it starts, you know, they're arguing amongst themselves, but until Lopez comes in, the arguments stop. Now Lopez is giving, you know, them what for a few seconds. And then Sanchez gets pissed off for whatever reason, and she hauls off and slaps Sophia. And she gave a good one. She gave a good slap there. And credit to Sophia Lopez. She took it and it went down. I mean, I don't know how light it was, but Sanchez delivered a good version of it. Why it was Sanchez, I don't know. Why did she get picked to, you know, start taking this verbally? Or why was she the one? Was she blamed for losing? I mean, I don't know, because it didn't seem like she was the cause, nor did it seem like she was actually being blamed. But for whatever reason, she was the brunt of this verbal assault. Even though it didn't look like she was the brunt of the verbal assault, we just have to go with the assumption that she is. So the assault on Lopez, it seemed to go from like 0 to 100 like that. You know, it's just a very visceral response, but I guess we have to wait another 2-3 weeks to understand why, because it's something that has to be explained. Like, what? Why did she decide to slap Lopez? We can assume that Las Banditas is over, and they start arguing with each other again at the end, as Lopez is seen on the ground holding her face, and she's, you know, oh my, you know, she's hurt. And that was it. That was the bulk of the show. And it goes to black. Not a terrible show by any stretch, but I don't know if it's one of my full-on better ones either. And like I said, if there's anything that's happening here, is she, the show probably was going to suffer regardless of what was on there. It could have been the best show that they ever had. But the problem is going to suffer no matter what, just because of this WrestleMania weekend. And WrestleMania weekend takes up the weekend. So I don't know if anybody that was a big wrestling fan was going to sit there and accept WOW over the opposition. Opposition is too strong of a word. Because they're not something that's opposing WOW. WOW is just, you know, something in his way. But, yeah, I mean, they had a full weekend that they had to fight against that, so I'm not expecting the world from it. Wouldn't have mattered what they did. They could have gave away the Beast versus the entire roster. And I don't think it would have drawn any more eyes than it would have normally got. Speaking of the Beast, there is the preview of what's coming on next episode. And this is the point where I give you a chance to step away from it if you're not wanting to know what it is, or, you know, depending on what I might say the following that. But this is your point before I read the preview for next episode. You still here? All right. So let us read the next one. This is what is coming up this weekend. That should be, what, the 13th, I believe. I've really lost track of my day. Anyway, so yeah, the episode will be 231. The title will be Nothing is As It Appears. Sorry, I had got trampled up over the words there. And here it is, their breakdown. Abilene Mavericks makes a special announcement that shakes the Wild roster to its core before the Beast wrestles Best in Show Breed competition champion Goldie Collins. Genesis hits the ring without Team Exile in their corner to take on Steffi Slays in singles action. Newcomer Americana and her highly decorated partner Santana Garrett are in for a surprise from the meddling Abilene Mavericks. Sorry. Can Angelica Dante keep her sister in check as Chainsaw continues her path of destruction with Chantilla Chella next on her to-do list? Ariel Sky makes a plea in the locker room, but she may have gotten herself in over her head. I don't know what any of this is. And it sounds kind of all over the page, just reading it right there, like newcomer Americana. She's been there for a year now. I don't know how new she should be considered at this point. What other special announcement? I mean, I hope this is not something that's just going to be a verbal letdown. I was like, what could possibly be said that's going to shake the roster to their core other than y'all fired? Like, I don't know what else would have caused that. The Beast wrestling the Best in Show, I've already told you that. You might as well just go ahead and say, yeah, the Beast wins. I will be highly surprised if the first win that Goldie Collins gets is over the Beast. Steffi Slays is going to be there just to do the job. I think that's going to be pretty evident. Genesis goes over. Chainsaw is there against Chantilla Chella. Chella's doing the job. I don't think that's going to be any shock there. And why is Ariel Sky making a plea to the locker room? A plea about what? She's already lost whatever it is that she needed. So I don't know what pleas would be necessary here and how would she have gotten herself in over her head. Who knows? Who knows what this is and where this is going? But I guess we'll have to tune in and find out. But that was the episode of WOW in Review. It will be interesting to see how this carries on and how this continues. But I will be completely honest with you to say that the amount of wrestling and wrestling news that happened in this week, from Thursday going into WrestleMania to the Thursday that I'm doing right now, as I'm recording, is a lot. And unfortunately, within that, WOW is lost in the shuffle and they're buried underneath just all of this stuff. Whatever it is that they might have had, it seems like it is just spinning its wheels. And especially when I read that. Now, I may have a different opinion once I watch the episode. It may be a phenomenal episode. It may be more than what I ever dreamed. But as of right now, it's like, I don't see what this means. I don't see how this is interesting. I don't see what are these promises of, what she's going to say is going to shake the roster to its core, and Ariel Sky might have got herself in over her head, and you know, just all those things. I don't know if any of that will live up to the hype that they have in the press release. But time will tell, and we will see. And that is going to do it, folks. That is going to cover the entirety of this episode in review. As I said, not a bad episode. And I probably had issues with like two segments out of the show, more so than the entirety of the show itself. The opening segment with Dave McClain, I absolutely had a problem with, because I don't know what they're trying to get out of that. I don't know how this is supposed to be portrayed. Is this supposed to be she believes everything she's saying? Does she not? Is she just joking around? You know, all of that stuff. It didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Ozzy and Del Rey, loved it. Brat Pack versus the Mighty Max, not too high on L Boogie still, but it was a good match. The Sweet Heat and the Dojo Defenders, I could have left that. Banditas and Tormenta versus the Island Dynasty, it is kind of like see the last match. The persons that they're in the ring with, in this case with Miami Sweet Heat, was the Dojo Defenders. With the case of the Banditas, is the Island Dynasty. The persons that they were in the ring with are just essentially there to facilitate the next thing happening. And the next thing happening in the case of the Banditas is the fight. Next thing happening in the case of Sweet Heat was securing a title match, which they did. So we might get 4-time Wild Tag Team Champions Miami Sweet Heat. Who knows? But that goes through the entire show. And like I said, the main event was fine. Short, but fine. I meant to bring this up early. If you have not had the opportunity to watch Billy Starks become the Ring of Honor Women's Television Champion, you might be able to find that floating around. She did a fake out spot that could be uncomfortable. Not saying it didn't work for the audience, but she did a fake out spot that could have been legitimately uncomfortable. I mean, she was hollering and screaming in the ring, faking a neck injury. I mean, of course I'm spoiling this now, but it's faking a neck injury, and they played it up as real. They played all that up as real. The only thing that gave me any pause to it possibly not being legitimate was that they didn't put her on a stretcher. Like if they felt like she was having a neck injury, like they're not gonna stand her up on her feet. That's about the only thing that I got. But other than that, I mean, it was a pretty strong match. And it's weird, the word I want to use. I mean, it was a fine ending, but an unconventional one. That we'll go with that. It was an unconventional ending. So, yeah, I had to make sure I got that in there. I forgot to mention that earlier. Please be so kind, if you haven't done already, to subscribe to the channel if you're listening to this on YouTube or watching this on YouTube. You can also, if you do not know where to find the podcast and where it releases, you can always go to WPNWrestling.com. WPNWrestling.com. And it's got all the links for everything that we do. Podcasts, videos, pictures, all of those go there. And the stream for the matches, the videos that we've done, runs all day, every day, based from stuff that was shot in late 2012, early 2013. Yes, back then. So you can see some of the people that you know, like your Kiera Hogans, like your Harlow Harris, who was Fury, like your Nina Monet, who was Siren. I don't know where she's been. And you probably can get to see some people that you have not seen too much of, like Tiffany Rocks, or like Rock and Roll Roxy, like Charlie Punk. Got a slew of people and talents, some of which have gone on to become famous. Other ones are still out there grinding and working hard and giving the best matches that they can give. So if you want to see that, feel free to tune in. WPNWrestling.com is the nexus for everything that we do. And that being said, I want to close this out and thank you for listening to another edition of the podcast. And your comments and questions have been wonderful. Thank you for that. So on that note, I want to leave by saying that this is Mr. Green saying that this is Mr. Green saying. So long. We'll see you on the next go-round. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the WPN's Rights and Wrongs of Pro Wrestling. If you have questions or comments, please contact us via our Facebook or our YouTube channel at the Women's Pro Wrestling Network. If you're new to the WPN, feel free to subscribe to our channel and like our page. We appreciate your support. Thank you again for listening.